चैतन्य दया नित्यानंद जय अद्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य दया नित्यानंद जय अद्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय अद्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद. Today we're reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 9, Lord Chaitanya's travels to the holy places, texts 2 through 4. Once again, Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhaktivinoda. All glories to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Lord Nityananda Prabhu. All glories to Advaita Prabhu. And all glories to the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Dakshina Gamana Prabhu Ati Vilakshana. Sahasra Sahasra Tita Kaila Darashana. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's tour of South India was certainly very extraordinary because he visited many thousands of places of pilgrimage there. Se Sabha Tirtha Sparshi Maha Tirtha Koyla. Se Chale Se Dasera Loka Nistarira. Se Sabha Tirtha Sparshi Maha Tirtha Koyla. Se Chale Se Dasera Loka Nistarira. Se Sabha Tirtha Sparshi Maha Tirtha Koyla. Se Chale Se Dasera Loka Nistarira. Ladies? Se Sabha Tirtha Sparshi Maha Tirtha Koyla. Se Chale Se Desera Loka Nistarira. Se Sabha Tirtha Sparshi Maha Tirtha Koyla. Se Chale Se Desera Loka Nistarira. Se Sabha. All those. Tirtha. Holy places. Sparshi. Touching. Mahatirtha. Into great places of pilgrimage. Koyla. Made them. Se Chale. Under that plea, Se Dasera, of those countries, Loka, the people, Nistarida, he delivered. Translation. When the Lord visited all those holy places, he converted many thousands of residents. Thus, many people were delivered. Simply by touching the holy places, he made them into great places of pilgrimage. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is said, Tirthi Kurvanti Tirthani. A tirtha, or holy place, is a place where saintly personalities visit or reside. Although the holy places were already places of pilgrimage, they were all purified by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's visit. Many people go to these holy places and leave their sinful activities there, thus becoming freed from contamination. When these contaminations pile up, they are counteracted by the visits of great personalities like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his strict followers. Many kinds of patients come to a hospital, which may be infected by many types of disease. Actually, the hospital is always infected, but the expert physician keeps the hospital sterilized by his expert presence and management. Similarly, places of pilgrimages are always infected by the sins left by sinners who go there. But when a personality like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visits such a place, all contaminations vanish. Om Agyanati Nirandasya Ganandana Sarakaya Chakshurun Militam Gena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Se Sabha Tirtha Sparshi Mahatirtha Kaila Se Chale Se Dasera Loka Nistarida. When the Lord visited all those holy places, he converted many thousands of residents. Thus, many people were delivered. Simply by touching those holy places, he made them into great places of pilgrimage. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada quotes Tirtha Kurvanti Tirthani, which was a verse spoken by Maharaj Yudhisthira to Vidura when he returned, coming back after many years. So he was saying that you've come here, and now you're purifying. You've been to holy places, you've been performing so many different tapasyas and austerities, and now you've come here and your presence purifies our home. Before I start, continue on. Today's class is obviously going to speak something of Varahadev, and we have this theme of holy places. And what I'm going to do is present like a collage of those different topics. A collage is a collection of different images, and each image is kind of like a topic or a story in itself, but when you put them all together, they also have a theme which blends together. So I'll try and present it like that. Holy places is where we'll start by explaining that there's two different kinds of holy places. One is this kind of a holy place where it's purified because of the presence of saintly people. We have the example of Vidura coming to the palace in Hastinapur. Can anybody else off the top of their head think of a situation where we have an ordinary place that becomes purified? All right, I was thinking of the same thing. Janmashtami? Very nice, yes, all the ISKCON temples. When Srila Prabhupada went to New York, it was an ordinary city. But by his presence, like even Tompkins Square Park, even the city has recognized something wonderful happened here. So this kind of situation is what is happening where Lord Chaitanya is traveling. But at the same time, those are already places of pilgrimage, which means that something else has happened prior to that, which also purified it and made it a special place. So there are those two kinds. Most profoundly, the Puranas. There are 18 Puranas in the Vedic literatures, and all of them, or most of them, have extensive descriptions of different holy places, places that exist because some event happened there, or the Lord's pastimes took place there. And in this way, inherently, the place becomes transcendentally surcharged. But there are places described in those Puranas which are actually in themselves, inherently by their nature, pure and transcendental, such as Vrindavan, Mathura, Navadvip, Purusottam, etc. We hear in the 12th canto of Bhagavat Purana, Markandeya Purana, Padma Purana, Skanda Purana, the story of Markandeya. Because maybe what we can do is pull up that purport, Madan, called... No, we'll wait on that one. Okay? Actually, Varaha purport. Yeah, I think on no, the lecture purport. Varaha purport. There are certain qualifications for a book to be called and classified as a Purana. There they are. It's called Panchalakshana, five distinguishing features of a Purana. A Purana must have a description of Sarga, the creation of the universe, Pratisarga, secondary creations or recreations after the disillusion, Vamsa, stories of genealogy of gods and sages, Manvantaras, the creation of Manus and the different races. We hear that there are 14 Manus in a day of Brahma, and Vamsanu Charitam, histories of lunar and solar dynasties. For any book to be a Purana, those have to be there. So within that course of history, it's like the history of the universe. Purana means old. Like Bahut Purana means something's very old. Or history. So a Purana is the history of what? It's the history of the universe. It talks about how it was created, Sarga, just like in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. We hear how the ingredients and the shell of the universe were created. And then Garbhodakshaya Vishnu laid down in the waters of Garbhodaka, and the lotus stem came up from his navel. And on the top of the lotus flower, Lord Brahma was born. So this is creation. Then what happened was described in the end of the second canto and third canto. Actually, third canto is where Lord Brahma creates the planets and the bodies and the residences for all the living entities in the universe. So that is Pratisarga. It's a secondary creation. Everything was created by the Lord, and then Lord Brahma took it, and he did a secondary creation. So it also says that there's recreations after disillusions. So now can we have that one called time? It's an image which Dhutakarma put together very nicely, which shows from a Puranic view what the universe timeline looks like. Now what happened with Markandeya? Markandeya was a rishi who performed great tapasya, especially brahmacharya. He was a celibate. And he became so powerful that Lord Narayan came to him after even Cupid tried to entice him and offered him a benediction. What do you want? What are you doing these penances and austerities for? And by the Lord's arrangement, because there's no other way to figure it, Markandeya said, I would like to see your illusory energy manifest. So the Lord said, so be it. You can live for seven kalpas. You look at the top. Can you go make it so we can see the top, Madan, please? Called a kalpa is a day of Brahma. Yeah, perfect. So actually, let us start from the bottom so we can kind of get an idea. And how we're tying this in is that Lord Vishnu is the maintainer of the universe, right? Lord Brahma is the mode of passion. Lord Vishnu is the maintainer in the mode of goodness. And Lord Shiva is the destroyer. So there's a whole mechanism in the entire universe, which is like a big machine, to maintain it. And it's very precise. And it's time. So down at the bottom, I don't know if you can see it very well, but we have Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwarpa Yuga, and Kali Yuga, the four yugas. The four yugas added together equal 4.32 million years. That's called the Divya Yuga. So when those four go around, that's one Divya Yuga. And then 71 of those equal one Manvantara. So that's 306 million years. 71 Divya Yugas. Now if you look on the left and the right, at the junctures of those times, when the Manvantaras are completed, there's 14 Manvantaras in one day of Brahma. Just like there's 60 minutes in 1 hour, if you want to break it down, you can see that there are 14 Manus in one day of Brahma. time is relative. So at the beginning and at the end, which is a sandhya of the manvantaras, there's a partial disillusion. Means that some of the planets in the universe are destroyed. Not all of them. The upper planets don't get destroyed. Now, can we go to Varaha purport? Now, in the chapter that Keshava just started, which is the appearance of Lord Varaha, there's verse 33 at the end of it. No, above that. Yeah, that's it. No, not Mathura. The other one, Varaha purport, but you were down too far on the page. Is there a top to that? Oh, I'm sorry, there, down. Does that go down further? There we go. Okay, this is towards the end of the chapter, after Lord Vara, and I'm jumping ahead, but we'll go back and hear about Lord Vara's appearance day again. But it's interesting how Viswanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this particular narration, which is Maitreya speaking to Vidura about the creation and about these topics of the creation and maintenance of the universe. Tamalinam sita danta kotya kshamam upiksha upsipantam gajala lila yanga pragnaya badanjalayo novakar virinji mukya utapastva isham. Understanding that the boar of black color who raised the earth on the tips of his tusks while playing like an elephant was the Supreme Lord, Brahma and others praised him with prayers while folding their hands. Now this purport is from Bhanu Swami's translation of Viswanath Chakravarti Thakur's book, a commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the Sveta Varaha Kalpa, the first day in the first month of the 51st day of Brahma's life, at the beginning of Swayambhuva Manvantara, Svetavaraha, white in color, appeared from the nostril of Brahma and lifted up the earth. Then he disappeared. So back, if you can remember, if possible, Madan, to switch back to that time one. So what we're talking about is during the Manvantaras, on both sides of it, there's 14 Manus in every day of Brahma. So during that Svayambhuva Manu, which is the first Manu, he appeared in a white form and saved the earth, which had fallen during that time of the partial devastation. It wasn't completely destroyed. It's like a bulb in those perennial flowers. It's not totally dead. Like, you know, tulips perennials? Okay, and we got a night jasmine in our house. And like in the fall, the whole thing falls apart. It actually, nothing, you can't see it. But in the spring now, all the green is starting to come back. So that's what happens in the universe. It's just like we see little cycles, that's a bigger cycle. So in the sixth Chakshusha Manvantara, when there was a sudden deluge, Nila Varaha, black in color or bluish, appeared in the water, lifted the earth, and killed Hiranyaksha. In the present section, Maitreya combines both appearances in his narration. This can be understood from the explanatory verses of Bhagavatamrita 1.3, 10 through 19. Now, when Lord Chaitanya sent Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis to Vrindavan, you remember that he told them that you study the Shastras and you show who is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in his writings, one of the books compiled for that purpose is Lago Bhagavatamrita. Lago Bhagavatamrita is by Rupa Goswami, and it has hundreds and hundreds of Puranic and Upanishadic texts proving that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu's and all his expansions are subordinates. So that's the nature of that book. So he found these quotes. The boar avatar appeared twice, first in Svayambhuva Manvantara from Brahma's nostril in order to lift the earth. and a second time during the Chakshusha Manvantara, appearing from the water, the boar with tusks assumed the four-legged animal form to kill Hiranyaksha and lift the earth. According to some authorities, however, this form is half man and half boar. So, sometimes we see pictures and images of Lord Boar, like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, ISKCON's BBT printings, of a whole boar. The entire entity is a Lord Boar. But in many different Hindu pictures and in deity form, we see that it's a human body with a boar head. So he's describing here that it's sometimes both, or that there are at least authorities say it's both. Sometimes the boar avatar is black like a cloud, and sometimes he's white like the moon. I had a very nice experience. Can we put on Svita Varaha? When I was in Vrindavan, 1981, and what I did was I took the Chaitanya Charitamrita and started to try and find all the different places where Lord Chaitanya had performed his pastimes, just like he's going to places of pilgrimage. Those are places of pilgrimage for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, so I wanted to find each place and go to that temple and read the pastime and whatever. So, not possible to make it bigger, huh? Maybe. So, in Mathura, where there's Vishram Ghat. Vishram Ghat is where, if you remember the story, we just read it a little while ago, after Krishna killed Kamsa, in order to satisfy Devaki and Vasudev, Krishna took Kamsa's body and he dragged it to the river. And then he rested. He showed that this is a dead body. And he dragged it. Vishram means to rest. Similarly, after one of these Varaha avatars, Varaha Dev sat and relaxed with Mother Bhumi as she offered her prayers to him. That's called Vishram Ghat. It's on the Yamuna, in that crest coming after it comes past Vrindavan. Then the river goes down and goes like in a crescent moon around Mathura. So Varahadev sat there and rested and spoke the Adi Varaha Purana. We'll read some from, we'll hear directly from Lord Varahadev at the end of the class, some of it. So in Mathura, I was traveling here and there, and there's one really nice Vallabhacharya temple of Dwarkadish, beautiful little temple. And I had heard about these deities of Varahadev. Now, that part of Mathura is like a hill. As it comes off the river, it goes up to a hill, and Dwarkadish temple is down at the bottom. So you have to go next to the temple and up these little tiny gullies and all around and up into the network of little roadways, I guess you'd call them, paths, in between the houses, and way up on top of the hill, there's one gully, one alley, with two different Varaha deities. Just like we read here, sometimes he appears white, and sometimes he appears dark, or blue, or red, or black. So this is Sweta Varaha. This deity, you can see how he's holding up. This is the white incarnation. Unfortunately, at that time, when I tried to enter the temple, they closed the doors, because I'm also white. So they wouldn't let me in. I had to look from the street. Now, Adi Varaha. So if you go up the gully a little ways more, then there was a very nice temple, and the people were very nice. Nice little house with a temple inside it. And that is Adi Varaha. So the history of that deity is quite unique. How old. How the Lord is transcendental to everything manifest in this world. In the Satya Yuga, a sage named Kapila gave this deity to Lord Indra. They told me at the house that Lord Brahma had fashioned this deity after the Varaha appearance. Pardon? No, this is a Mathura. This is Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai by Jula Maharaj Das. When his kingdom was usurped by Ravana, Indra lost possession of this murti, And Ravana took Svetavaraha with him to his capital in Lanka. After a long time, Lord Ramachandra came to Lanka and killed Ravana. When Ravana's brother, Vibhishana, was installed on the throne, he offered everything to Ram. But Ram refused the kingdom. He told Vibhishana, "O Rakshasa Vibhishana, I shall not have anything to do with all of this kingdom. You may just give me the deity that was taken here from the city of Indra. I shall take him to Ayodhya and worship him every day." Vibhishana gave Ram the Kapila Viraha, whom Ram carried to Ayodhya in a flower airplane. He installed the deity at Ayodhya and worshipped him there for 110 years. Then, when Shatrughna, Lord Ram's brother, went to Madhupuri Mathura to defeat some demons, he brought the deity with him, and Lord Svetavaraha has been there ever since. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur visited the sacred temple during his parikrama. There's just been recorded in our book, Sri Vajra Mandala Parikrama. And at that temple, they have the book where Bhakti Siddhanta signed his name. A lot of times in India, they'll have this, you know, like when you go on pilgrimage, they'll have a guest book. So Bhakti Siddhanta's signature is there. So that explains a little bit about how there are partial disillusions and how the Lord manifests himself in these transcendental forms to not only enact lilas, but also to maintain the universe. Paritanaya sarunam vinishaya te duskritam dharma samastarpanataya sambhavami yuge yuge. So now we'll read further about continuing that story that Keshava read. Sri Manu said, "O all-powerful Lord, O killer of all sins, I shall abide by your order. Now please let me know my place and that of the living entities born to me." So what's happened here is that Brahma has the creation, and now Manu, in charge of mankind, is asking him, he's created him, I think he was a mental son of Brahma, and he's saying, "Now you propagate and you manage this mankind." So Manu is asking, "All right, I'll abide by your order. Where do I go and what do I do?" "O master of all the demigods, please attempt to lift the earth, which is merged in the great water, because it is the dwelling place for all living entities. It can be done by your endeavor and by the mercy of the Lord." This is Manu explaining that, well, I'd like to do my duty to mankind, but the earth is in the Garbhodaka ocean. How can I do it? Please make some arrangement for that residence. Pardon? Yeah, this is 3rd canto, 13th chapter. This is our database. Veda.com, database.com. We'll have it. 3:13:16. Sri Maitreya said, "Thus seeing the earth merged in the water, Brahma gave his attention for a long time on how it could be lifted. Brahma thought, while I've been engaged in the process of creation, the earth has been inundated by a deluge and gone down into the depths of the ocean. What can we do who are engaged in the matter of creation? It is best to let the Almighty Lord direct us." O sinless Vidura, all of a sudden, while Brahma was thus engaged in thinking, a small form of a boar came out of his nostril. The measurement of the creature was not more than the upper portion of a thumb. O descendant of Bharat, if you go to vedabase.com and just get that one page where all the texts are there, it'll be a little easier than flipping through all the purports. O descendant of Bharat, while Brahma was thus observing him, that boar became situated in the sky in a wonderful manifestation, as gigantic as an elephant. So he came out as big as a thumb, and then right in front of everybody, expanded himself to as big as a mountain. Struck with wonder at observing the wonderful boar-like form in the sky, Brahma, with great Brahmins like Marichi, as well as Kumaras and Manu, began to argue in various ways. Is this some sort of extraordinary entity come from the pretense of a boar? It's very wonderful it is, come from my nose. First of all, the boar was seen no bigger than a tip of a thumb, and within a moment he was as large as a stone. My mind is perturbed. Is he the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu? While Brahma was deliberating with his sons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, roared tumultuously like a great mountain. The omnipotent Supreme Personality of Godhead enlivened Brahma and the other highly elevated Brahmins by again roaring with his uncommon voice, which echoed in all directions. When the great sages and thinkers who are residents of Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satchiloka heard the tumultuous voice of Lord Bor, which was all auspicious sound of the all-merciful Lord, they chanted auspicious Vedas, chants from the three Vedas. Playing like an elephant, he entered into the water after roaring again in reply to the Vedic prayers by the great devotees. The Lord is the object of Vedic prayers, and thus he understood that the devotees' prayers were meant for him. Before entering the water to rescue the earth, Lord Bor flew in the sky, slashing his tail, his hard hairs quivering. His very glance was luminous, and he scattered the clouds in the sky with his hooves and his glittering white tusks. He was personally the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, and was therefore transcendental. Yet because he had the body of a hog, he searched after the earth by smell. His tusks were fearful, and he glanced over the devotee Brahmins engaged in offering prayers. Thus he entered the water. Diving into the water like a great mountain, Lord Bor divided the middle of the ocean, and two high waves appeared as the arms of the ocean, which cried loudly as if praying, O Lord of all sacrifices, please do not cut me in two. Kindly give me protection. Lord Bor penetrated the water with his hooves, which were sharp like arrows, and found the limits of the ocean, although it was unlimited. He saw the earth, the resting place for all living beings, lying as it was in the beginning of creation, and he personally lifted it. Lord Bor very easily took the earth upon his tusks and got it out of the water. Thus he appeared very splendid. Then, his anger growing like a Sudarshan wheel, he immediately killed the demon Hiranyaksha, although he tried to fight with the Lord. Thereupon, Lord Bor killed the demon within the water. Just as a lion kills an elephant, the cheeks and tongue of the Lord became smeared with the blood of the demon, just as an elephant becomes reddish from digging up in the purple earth. Then the Lord, playing like an elephant, suspended the earth on the edge of his curved white tusks. He assumed a bluish complexion like that of a tamal tree, and thus the sages, headed by Brahma, could understand him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that verse is what we just read the purport to. It's confusing because in one verse he's saying that he's white, right? And then he assumed a bluish complexion. But we just read that what Maitreya is doing is he's taking different descriptions, different appearances of the Lord and merging them into one narration from different Manvantara, partial devastation time. All the great sages uttered, O unconquerable enjoyer of all sacrifices, all glories and all victories unto you. You are moving into your form of the personified Vedas, and in the hair holes of your body, the oceans are submerged. For certain reasons, to uplift the earth, you have now assumed the form of a boar. O Lord, your form is worshipable by performance of sacrifice, but souls who are simply miscreants are unable to see it. All the Vedic hymns, Gayatri and others, are in touch of your skin. In your bodily hairs is the kusha grass. In your eyes is the clarified butter. And in your four legs are the four kinds of fruitive activities. O Lord, your tongue is a plate of sacrifice. Your nostril is another plate of sacrifice. In your belly is the eating plate of sacrifice. And another plate of sacrifice is the holes of your ears. In your mouth is the Brahma plate of sacrifice. Your throat is the plate of sacrifice, known as soma, and whatever you chew is known as agnihotra. Moreover, O Lord, the repetition of your appearance is there, is the desire for all kinds of initiation. Your neck is the place for three desires, and your tusks are the result of initiation and the end of all desires. Your tongue is the prior activities of initiation. Your head is the fire without sacrifice, as well as the fire of worship, and your living forces are the aggregate of all desires. This is very similar to the first step in God realization, where they're seeing the entire universe as a manifestation of the Lord's energy, and that energy is personified in this feature of Lord Varaha, Lord Vishnu, before them. There's a few more prayers, and there's a benediction, so it's worth paying attention for. O Lord, your semen is the sacrifice called Soma Yajna. Your growth is the ritualistic performances in the morning. Your skin and touch sensations are the seven elements and the Agni Stoma sacrifice. Your bodily joints are symbols of various other sacrifices performed in 12 days. Therefore, you are the object of all sacrifices called Soma and Asoma, and you are bound by Yajnas only. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead and are worshipable by universal prayers, Vedic hymns, and sacrificial ingredients. We offer our obeisances unto you. You can be realized by the pure mind, freed from all visible and invisible material contamination. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you as the Supreme Spiritual Master of knowledge and devotional service. O lifter of the earth with its mountains, which you have lifted with your tusks, is situated beautifully as a lotus flower with leaves sustained by an infuriated elephant just coming out of the water. O Lord, as peaks of a great mountain become beautiful when decorated with clouds, your transcendental body has become beautiful because of your lifting the earth on the edge of your tusks. O Lord, for the residential purposes of all inhabitants, both moving and non-moving, this earth is your wife, and you are the Supreme Father. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you, along with Mother Earth, in whom you have invested your own potency, just as an expert sacrificer puts fire in Arni wood. Who else but you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, could deliver the earth from within the water? It is not very wonderful for you, however, because you acted most wonderfully in the creation of the entire universe. By your energy, you have created this wonderful cosmic manifestation. One of the points in these purports is that the floating ability of the planets is one of the features of the Supreme Lord's power. Who can make something float in space? We have to have it all connected to things. That nobody can just make something float. But Lord Bor, Lord Vishnu, has lifted this earth out and he's placed it in space and made it float. So sometimes, we were listening the other day to a nice lecture, Srila Prabhupada was talking about how sometimes they don't believe that a seven-year-old boy could lift a hill. Well, what about a boar lifting the whole planet and putting it in space and just leaving it there and then it floats? These things are inconceivable. But by hearing them, by applying them with logic and argument, with all the other Vedic things, we can come to understand that there are things beyond our capacity. We're not all-knowing. So there has to be an acceptance of things beyond our own cognizance. O Supreme Lord, undoubtedly we are inhabitants of the most pious planets, Jana, Tapa, and Satyalokas. But still we have been purified by the drops of water sprinkled from your shoulder hairs, by the shaking of your body. So I guess when he came out, just like animals shake to get the water off him, he was shaking. O Lord, there's no limit to your wonderful activities. Anyone who desires to know the limit of your activities is certainly nonsensical. Everyone in the world is conditioned by the powerful mystic potencies. Please bestow your causeless mercy upon these conditioned souls. Maitreya continued, the Lord, being thus worshipped by all the great sages and transcendentalists, touched the earth with his hooves and placed it on the water. In this manner, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the maintainer of all living entities, raised the earth from within the water, and having placed it afloat on the water, returned to his own abode. If one hears or describes in a devotional service attitude this auspicious narration of Lord Bor, which is worthy of description, the Lord, who is within the heart of everyone, is very pleased. Nothing remains unachieved when the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased with someone. By transcendental achievement, one understands everything else to be insignificant. One who engages in transcendental loving service is elevated to the highest perfectional stage by the Lord himself, who is seated in everyone's heart. Who, other than one who is not a human being, can exist in this world and not be interested in the ultimate goal of life? Who can refuse the nectar of narrations about the Supreme Personality of Godhead's activities, which by itself can deliver one from all material pangs? Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports to the third canto, 30th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Appearance of Lord Varaha. So we have a couple things more we have time for. One lecture clip by Srila Prabhupada explaining about these incarnations of the Lord, why they come, and then what I'll do is read some nice verses from the Adi Varaha Purana, actually from the Mathura Mahatmya by Rupa Goswami, verses spoken by Lord Varaha to Mother Bhumi.
Now, here it says, Lilavatara Anurata Devatis Jagnaradish. God is always anxious to get us back to home, back to Godhead. So apart from his incarnations amongst the Deva, demigods, just like Upendra, Lord Bamandev, he appeared amongst the demigods. There are so many other incarnations, demigods. God appeared as incarnation of both, incarnation of horse, incarnation of tortoise. Kesava dhita kurma sarira jaya jagadisa hari. Kurma sarira. Kesava dhita meena sarira jaya jagadisa hari. There are so many incarnations. So, he has got innumerable incarnations, as I have told you. Several times, just like the waves of the river, one cannot count. Similarly, nobody can count how many incarnations are coming, always, incessant, one after another. Lilavataranurato devatis jagnaradish. And amongst the human being, we know Lord Ramchandra came, Lord Krishna came, Rishabhdev came, and Lord Chaitanya came. So Krishna is always trying, because he is the father. Krishna says, Aham bijapada pita sarvajonishu kaunte. Sarvajonishu, there are different species of life, forms of life, because we wanted to enjoy this material world, to utilize the resources of material world, that is our activity. Even at the present moment, always, everyone is busy how to exploit the resources of material nature. That is advancement of civilization. Advancement of civilization means how to exploit the material resources But they do not know, the foolish people do not know, that is not advancement, that is entanglement. That is not advancement. This knowledge they are lacking. They do not know what is advancement. Advancement means advancement in spiritual life. That is advancement. We are spirit. In a sense, we are spirit soul. We have been encased within this body. Therefore, advancement means how to get out of this entanglement of repetition of birth and death. So, at the present moment, the whole civilization is a set of rascals only, that's all. There is no education. They do not know. And because they do not know, Krishna comes just to make this rascal to inform. Krishna says, I am aham adhihi devanam aham sarvasya prabhava matta sarvang pravartate sarvadharman paritdhajya mamitam saranam bhaja marmana bhavavad bhakta madhya canvasi. Canvasi. My dear sons, why you are rotting in this material world, please come, you are my beloved son. I do not tolerate, or I cannot see that you are suffering. This is Krishna's business. He is more kind. He is more anxious to get us back. Therefore he comes personally. Then again when we mistake him, Krishna said, sarva-dharmān parityajya māmekaṁ saraṇaṁ bhaja. The rascals, they thought, oh, why is demanding so much? This is sophistry. Why shall I surrender to you? That is our position. Krishna says that you surrender, I take charge of you. Mā śūca aham tvā sarvi pāpebhu mokkhasyāmi. I shall give you relief from all difficulties. No, why shall I? Just see how much rascals we are. And they are going as a civilized man. All fools, rascals, and rogues and thieves, that's all. This is the position. All fools and rascals and rogues. Ajānata. Ajānata means rascals, one who does not know. Ajānata. Therefore, Vyāsadeva made this śāstra, this Śrīmad Bhāgavata. Ajānata, for these rascals, one who does not know the aim of life. Anartha upasamam sākṣād bhakti yugam madhokkhaje. We are meeting with so many problems of life, these are called anarthas, unnecessarily. I am spirit soul, you are spirit soul, we are as good as God, anandamaya vyasat, our real position is ananda, sachidananda. So why you are meeting so many problems? This is due to this body. Therefore, the real culture is, real education is, how to stop this repetition of body, but they do not know.
So many different facilities the Lord is making for the living entities. He's coming himself, he's create the dhams are there, he is manifesting in his deity forms, the books, education, knowledge is there, so many different things. So after lifting the earth and everything was settled back, when Lord Varaha, and this was really wonderful, I don't know if you've ever seen, there's the little green books by Motilal Banarsidas. Years ago, even now, it's hard to find a translation. I couldn't find a direct translation online of the Varaha Purana. In Puri I have the book because I got it in India 30 years ago. But what happened was that, you know that verse about the six Goswamis, Nana Shastra Vicharanaika Nipano Sadharma Samstapako, Nana Shastra Vicharanaika. It's inconceivable how these Goswamis are living so simply with, how did they get all these Puranas and Upanishads and books and keep them in the forest with no, you know, with a grass hut? and they're writing on palm leaves, and they had to keep all that all organized, and they didn't have internet with database and search and find and replace and all that. They didn't have these facilities, but so attuned to something when they read it that they could go back and find that. And then, what, like I said, Lago Bhagavatamrita, Rupa Goswami took all these verses from all over the Vedas and put them together in a compilation explaining how Krishna is. It's not all from one book, like a little cut and paste. He's finding everything from everywhere. So similarly, Lord Chaitanya told him that you reestablish these holy places of Mathura and Vrindavan. So Rupa Goswami similarly took a book created a book, compiled the book, from all different Puranic references about the glories of Mathura. And the name of the book is Mathura Mahatmya. So we'll read the first 50 verses only, several hundred. O Mathura, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. This is Lord Varaha, it will be Lord Varaha, speaking the glories on the banks of the Jamuna. You're glorious because you award the sacrifice of gradual advancement in devotional service, which Sri Hari does not personally give to those who worship him, but rather awards them liberation. I am joyfully compiling the glories of Mathura, which is the crest jewel among all holy places, and which awards happiness in the hearts of pious people. Mathura takes away all one's sinful reactions. It is stated in the Adi Varaha Purana. The measurement of Mathura Mandala is 20 yojanas. If human beings take bath in any place within Mathura Mandala, they will achieve liberation from all their sinful reactions. O Earth, at every step in Mathura Mandala, one can achieve the result of traveling to all the holy places. By taking bath at any place within Mathura, people are delivered from grave sins. O Devi, this abode of Mathura destroys all one's sinful reactions and vanquishes the pangs of hell, even for sinful persons who are devoid of all religious principles. If cheaters, drunkards, thieves, or those who break their vows go to Mathura, they will also become freed from all sinful reactions. As the darkness is dissipated by sunshine, as a mountain is broken into pieces by strike of a thunderbolt, as a snake runs away in fear of Garuda, as a cloud is pushed away by the force of the wind, as one's miseries are mitigated by achieving knowledge of the truth, and as other animals run away seeing a lion, all one's heaps of sinful reactions are destroyed at once, simply by seeing the land of Mathura. When a most sinful person who has killed a Brahmin can become purified by going to Mathura with faith and devotion, then what to speak of other sinful people? A person who goes to Mathura with a desire to take bath there, at every step his sinful reactions are removed from his body. Even if a person goes to Mathura with the purpose of doing business and takes his bath and eats his meal there, he is at once liberated from all his sinful reaction and goes to heaven. One who chants the holy name of the Lord in Mathura is always freed from sinful reactions. Satya Yuga and Uttarayana are always present in Mathura. O Devi, if one hears the name of Mathura uttered by someone else, then such a person also attains liberation from his sinful reactions. Ordinary people can be purified by touching the dust from the feet of persons who have lived in Mathura for even 3 days. In the conversation between Lord Shiva and Parvati, recorded in the Patala Kanda of Padma Purana, it is stated, the places near the banks of the Jamuna are the abode of Krishna's pastimes. Within this tract of land, there is a most sanctified place called Mathura, which destroys all one's sinful reactions. As blazing fire burns heaps of grass to ashes, the abode of Mathura burns the most grave sins to ashes. It is also stated in the Skanda Purana, Kashi Kanda, there is an enchanting place of Lord Krishna's pastimes known as Madhuvan on the banks of the Jamuna. This is the most holy land for devotees of Lord Hari. Sinful people can certainly become sinless by attaining this land. Mathura is the bestower of auspiciousness. It is stated in the Adi Varaha Purana. The piety achieved one achieves by performing an Asvamedha and Rajasuya sacrifices can easily be achieved simply by residing in Mathura with controlled senses for 3 days. My abode of Mathura consists of 20 yojana. There's no doubt that at every step there one attains the result of performing an Aswamedha yajna. The amount of piety one accumulates by taking bath in all the holy places is easily obtained simply by residing in Mathura. The amount of piety a person obtains by studying the four Vedas is obtained by saintly persons simply by uttering the word Mathura. We were hearing a nice lecture yesterday. Srila Prabhupada was talking about, he was saying, you think it's easy to chant Hare Krishna? He said, it's not easy. And then he quoted the verses which says that one must have performed hundreds and thousands of lifetimes of pious activities in order to constantly have the holy name of the Lord on their tongue. So this accumulation of piety may seem like something material, or like it's not. That verse in Bhagavad Gita, Neha Bhikramanasho Stipakyavayo Navidyate Svapamapyasa Dharmasya Trayate Mahatobayat, means there's no loss or diminution. Whatever is performed in one lifetime goes to the next, goes to the next, goes to the next. So these type of activities of simply traveling to holy places helps one nourish their bhakti. Mathura takes away all one's sinful reactions. In the Adivaraha Purana, it is said, the reaction of committing sinful activities elsewhere is nullified by visiting holy places. But if one commits sinful activities in a holy place, then it certainly strikes him with the force of a thunderbolt. If one commits sin in Mathura, his sinful reactions will be counteracted only in Mathura. Any sinful activities or pious activities committed either knowingly or unknowingly are certainly destroyed by the influence of the abode of Mathura, O beautiful lady, Mother Earth. This transcendentally spiritual abode of Mathura, where Lord Sri Krishna, whose lotus feet are adorned with various auspicious marks, such as a disc, has spontaneously performed his divine pastimes, is always confidential. O goddess Vasundara, since you are my devotee and disciple, I am disclosing this truth to you. O goddess Vasundara, I have never before revealed this truth to anyone, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Because this abode of mine is the most secret of all secrets, I always keep it confidential. O Mahadevi, the sinful reaction that takes 10 years to nullify elsewhere is destroyed in Mathura in 10 days only. In the Vayu Purana, it is stated, sins committed in Mathura are destroyed also in Mathura. If a human being resides there, he automatically achieves religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. Padma Purana Patala Kanda states, sinful reactions accumulated from many births are destroyed in due course of time, but those sins are destroyed at once in Mathura. Mathura is the topmost of all holy places. It is stated in the Adivaraha Purana, O Vasundara, there is no holy place in the lower planetary system, higher planetary system, or earthly planet that is equal to my abode of Mathura. On hearing this, Mother Earth asked the Lord, O supremely opulent Lord, why are you glorifying Mathura rather than glorifying other holy places such as Naimisharanya, Pushkar, or Varanasi? Sri Varaha Dev replied, famous by the name Mathura, my most dear abode is attractive and unlimited. It is my birthplace and is very dear to me. O Devi, among all holy places, Mathura is the most important because Lord Sri Krishna performed many pastimes there. Every step of this land is purifying. It is the abode of Sri Krishna's childhood pastimes with his cowherd boyfriend. And this place is decorated with the marks of Sri Krishna's lotus feet. O chaste lady, I am telling you the truth. The topics regarding the holy places of Mathura that were established by great sages are the essence of all. There is no holy place superior to Mathura, and there is no god superior to Keshava. Adivaraha Purana. O Vasundara, now hear attentively to me, attentively to whatever truth I am explaining. The place where my most dear consort Sri Radha resides is renowned as Mathura. O beautiful one, in the Dwarpa Yuga, this beautiful and unlimited abode of Mathura will become my birthplace. O Vasundhara, I will certainly take birth in the dynasty of King Yayati and reside there for 500 years. See, Narada has said in Skanda Purana Mathura Kanda, O most learned one, O knower of religious principles, please hear about the religious topics that you have inquired. Among the seven abodes, the abode of Mathura is most confidential. The result one obtains by performing pious activities in any part of India for 33,000 years is obtained simply by remembering Mathura. It is stated in the Adi Varaha Purana, O Devi, the result one obtains by taking bath at Prayag on the full moon day in the month of February during the Kumbh Mela is obtained in Mathura every day. The piety a person achieves by taking birth at Pushkar on a full moon day in the month of Kartik is achieved every day in Mathura. The amount of piety one achieves by taking bath in holy places of Varanasi during a solar eclipse is achieved by a self-controlled person simply living in Mathura. O Devi, the result one achieves by residing in Varanasi for 1,000 years is achieved by residing in Mathura for simply a moment. Padma Purana, Patala Khanda, the result one obtains by residing at Prayag, the kingdom of all holy places, for 1,000 kalpas is obtained in Mathura every day. If a person performs austerities on the banks of the Godavari for 12 months, donates land at Kurukshetra, and performs austerities in Gaya for 6 months, it is still not equal to the piety achieved by residing in Mathura for one day. Holy places like Dwarka, Kanchi, Hardwar, and Gaya are never equal to Mathura. By offering oblations to the forefathers by the water of the Jamunas in Mathura, the forefathers no longer desire any oblations. Therefore, it is stated in the Uttarakhanda of Padma Purana, know that those who consider Mathura an ordinary place are certainly sinful. Can there be any doubt that the place where the Supreme Brahman Sri Krishna constantly performs his transcendental pastimes is topmost amongst all holy places? So it gives us an indication of what Lord Chaitanya is actually offering us. And in this way, we can see that that collage has some holy places and it has some pastimes of Lord Varahadev. Are there any questions or comments? Mathura Mahatmya by Rupa Goswami, published by Pundarika Vidyanidhi and Bhumipati. I think it's 8 miles. I think so, yeah. It said 20 yojanas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would be 160 miles.
Yeah. Vrindavan itself, well, when you do Braj Mandal Parakrama, it's Charosi Kos. Oh, that's a kosher. That's 64 square miles. 84. Anyway, I have to look it up. I'm not sure. And comment about it?
So my understanding is that the earth fell into the Garbhagak ocean. One time it was by a dissolution with water. Is that correct?
I think from my understanding, I mean, it's like a pretty complex topic, the creation and the dissolutions, but it appears that at every Manvantara's sandhya, that there's a partial devastation, and that means that things are destroyed and fall down into that Garbhodaka ocean. And then at the next creation, again, they have to be put back up. And I kind of relate it to gardening or seasonal changes, where stuff breaks down and all the leaves fall off the trees and, you know, it's dormant. And then when springtime comes, it comes back. And by the Lord's arrangement, by maintenance, by these activities and pastimes, it's all, again, put back so that there's those facilities for those living entities in those lower abodes.
And then I seem to remember reading one time that when the earth fell into the Garbhagak ocean with the pastime when Lord Brahma was fighting with Hiranyaksha, that Prabhupada explained in the purport that there was some kind of drilling in the earth.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so, and then he compared it to, I think they were drilling for gold or something.
Yes.
And then he said, just like in modern days, people drill for oil, which upsets the gravity of the earth. And then I think he explained that because of that drilling, the earth actually fell into the ocean.
Yeah, he did mention that Hiranyaksha
in that past
exploited so much gold that it caused, yes, some disturbance in that balance. I mean, it's pretty common sense, isn't it? If you have a ball that's filled with liquids and solids and you move them all to one side, that it would tilt and fall over. Or if you suck out millions of barrels of liquid every day and move it around, then something's going to happen. Global warming or who knows. Yeah, thank you.
So it seems like in this past time that it was because there was drilling mm-hmm. that upset the balance.
Yeah, didn't he say it like suddenly fell?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe not a disillusion, something, an anomaly.
Yeah.
Janmashtami Prabhu?
I asked this question of someone after the class once, and it might have been you, so forgive me if I can't exactly remember, but, you know, understanding that the material world is a reformatory facility for the jiva to be get to the point by doing good time in the prison of gaining the qualification to go back to the spiritual world. So it would seem that the acharyas would give some kind of an explanation for these cycles of divya yugas and but I've never heard, you know. Did I ask that question?
No.
So you've delved deeply into different shastras, and I'm wondering if you have an explanation for why that takes place. I mean, there's an obvious parallel with the seasonal changes that take place on the earth, but you know, certainly Kali Yuga, when Lord Chaitanya comes, is especially merciful, but have you ever heard of an explanation for why the universes go through these cycles?
I understand, I never really heard anything, but my understanding is that it's nature. It's part of the way, it's the way the machine works.
It's like a prison is designed in a certain way, you know,
yeah.
Probably with some kind of reformatory impetuses in the design. You know, someone goes into solitary confinement.
Oh, I see. Yes.
You know, I mean, so that's, you know, would
the,
be kind of an obvious...
The purport by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on the Tenu Kampam Shukshamikshmana verse gives the best explanation of that that I've ever heard. That the... just like if a person performs a criminal activity, then the judge prescribes a particular time and situation, like you said, what do they call it? The motive. First degree, second degree, third degree, grand larceny, petty theft. There are different degrees of criminal mentality. So there are different degrees of misuse of independence by the living entity and desire to enjoy and greed and all that. So according to the severity of the misuse, there has to be an appropriate punishment or circumstance which will correct that person. If you have a murderer and you simply slap him on the hand and put him back in society, he'll do the same thing over and over again. So the tendency has to be changed. It has to be corrected, and the severity of the punishment is, that's why they call it a house of correction, is meant to bring about that transformation. So the whole cosmic manifestation is perfect in that mechanism, that every soul, every jiva who's a conditioned soul who's fallen into the material world is in an appropriate confinement specific to their situation, to their nature. And by the mechanism of material nature's working in karma, will gradually bring them to the point where they come to the human form of life and then finally inquire, why am I here? And then start to perform some pious activities, and finally come in contact with devotees, finally perform some bhakti, and ultimately go back to Godhead.
Seem to just perfectly fit.
Yes.
This reformation.
Yeah, it's all part of a super divine tapestry of activity to facilitate that. That's the purpose of the material world.
The 18 Puranas, do they each have a separate creation story, or is it the same basic one as in the Bhagavad Purana?
Oh, interesting. No, they all have some similar stories, and they all have individual separate stories. They're very different. Yeah.
Any examples of a quite different one from the Bhagavats?
Shiva Puranas. There are actually categories of 18 Puranas. There's six in each mode of nature: passion and goodness and ignorance. So, as we were just discussing in the previous question and topic, how everything is meant to gradually elevate, so people in the mode of ignorance aren't mature enough to worship in the mode of goodness, and they need certain rituals and pastimes and worship so that they can gradually elevate. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, even if one worships the demigods, I give him the results of his activities so that his faith becomes strong. So some of those tamasic Puranas describe the worship of Shiva. You asked for an example. So that would be an example how they're leading by following the texts. People are worshiping Lord Shiva rather than the Supreme, rather than the Bhagavat Purana, rather than the Supreme Person, because they're not mature enough or ready for that in their sojourn.
But how is the creation described in, say, the Shiva Purana?
Oh, no, creation is always the same. Okay. Yeah, as far as I know. Yes, thank you.
Romano? Nice lecture you always giving. You know, like when Srila Prabhupada went to the last Kumbh Mela, mm-hmm. in Allahabad, he was very sealed, remember? So the same thing, Prabhupada went to purify the place.
Yes.
With his disciples from all over the world. But and then the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Prabhupada mentions in one of his translations, because he has a few, is the saintly persons or pure devotees like the six Goswamis that made this planet Earth light. Mm. They clean the sinful activities.
Nice.
You know, pure devotees, the Prabhupada. So similarly, when Prabhupada traveling all over the world and brings Vrindavan at the same time with him, you know, his mood is chanting Yajurava Madhava, but that's Vrindavan mood, purifying the whole planet. Yeah.
All right, beautiful. Yes, thank you. Hare Krishna. Lord Varaha Dev ki jai.